never thought of myself as a complex man or as someone who was really that hard to understand. But it would hardly take a genius to realize that I've always been a lot too arrogant, a little too fucking wise. I was a combination that made a lot of folks feel duty-bound to do whatever they could to try and shoot me down. To head off some of the things that I might possibly say to see if they couldn't take some of my pride away. To bring me disappointment, to teach me to fear it. Obviously, these are folks just didn't have no spirit. Conspiracy don't give up. Yes, it's time to stop your falling. You've been down long enough. Can't you hear the spirit's calling? Yes, it's the spirit. Can't you hear it? Calling your name, calling your name. Yeah, talking about spirit. There are people whose lives are so far off the track.
That's poet, musician, composer, author, and spoken word performer Gil Scott-Heron with Spirits. It's the title track of his 1994 album. Gil Scott-Heron died on May the 27th, 2011, at the age of 62. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. And today, Justice on Hold. The Maryland court delays a cop's trial in the Freddie Gray case. Our guest, attorney at law, Alton H. Maddox, Jr., is going to help us dissect yesterday's ruling by Maryland's Court of Special Appeals, postponing the trial of a Baltimore police officer charged in the death of Freddie Gray. Officer Caesar Goodson, the driver of a police transport van in which Freddie Gray suffered neck and spinal cord injuries that led to his death on April the 19th, 2015, was scheduled to go to trial yesterday. But the appeals court halted the trial, saying it needed time to review the hearing judge's decision to allow prosecutors to call as a witness against Goodson fellow officer William Porter. Porter, you may recall, the first of six officers indicted in Freddie Gray's death to go to trial, was the beneficiary of a jury's decision, and actually it's an indecision. The jury declared that it was hopelessly deadlocked. A mistrial was declared in that case just in December, with the promise of the prosecutor to retry Porter. So we are going to revisit this case, and Attorney Maddox, who you know had predicted the outcome of Porter's trial, is going to be with us. And we're going to start with this question of the legal back door that seems to have been flung open here, but to allow the police to get preferential treatment in this case. But it is also suggesting that the prosecutor's legal strategy is either succeeding or failing, depending on how you see it. Alton Maddox, I always take pride in introducing as, in fact, the people's attorney general. All of his years, spanning four decades and more, in the trial of cases and in confronting the system successfully in court, he has set legal precedents in many of these cases, especially those pertaining to the appointment of special prosecutors and cases involving police brutality and lethal use of force. And he has taken on many cases pro bono. In fact, all cases that I know of have been done for no fee at all, but in the interest of the class affected. And Alton, it is a great joy to have you with us today, and Happy New Year, if I may say so. But thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation, Eutrice, and Happy New Year as well to you and all.
Well, let's talk this situation through. The Court of Special Appeals in Maryland says that there is a huge question here now about whether Officer Porter, William Porter, should be compelled to testify against his fellow officer who was up for trial starting yesterday. That's Officer Goodson. Does the Court of Special Appeals have an arguable point here?
Well, Eutrice, let me first revisit what we said at the outset, and that is that in every criminal prosecution, especially one which is a Nuremberg prosecution, there is always a military plan that follows military intelligence. And I have tried to convince our people this for years, and nobody have their listening ears on yet to listen to what you say. But that's not surprising, because Dr. John Henry Clark said that black people will not listen. So, you know, I could holler at the top of my lungs. Nobody's going to listen. And everybody got their own views. Of course, nobody know fought white supremacy, however, and we never asked them what's their track record in fighting white supremacy, but we're willing to listen to their views and their opinions. Now, in this Maryland case, the first thing that must be recognized is that Porter should have never been the lead defendant. And I said that right from the outset.
You certainly did.
Right. And I said that in a case like this, what you have to do is go from top to bottom, not from bottom to top. Porter is a pawn in this game. He is not in any way the king, as is recognized in the game of chess. And so, therefore, he has also, as a pawn, been able to escape any conviction. And now he is at the center of all that is going on in terms of the struggle as a pawn. And so now you have a situation where the Intermediate Appellate Court in Maryland has assumed jurisdiction on whether Porter's constitutional rights may be abridged by subpoenaing him to testify against his fellow officers. Now, that in itself is a long-drawn, protracted process that could go not only through the Maryland Intermediate Appellate Court, but also Maryland's High Court, and then the U.S. Supreme Court. So by the time all this happened, you and I may not even be around. But that is what happens when you start off on the wrong foot, and this becomes predictable. And so at this particular stage, the Maryland courts may very well say that his constitutional rights would be violated if he has a defendant himself and suffering the possibility of punishment would be subjecting himself to self-incrimination and incrimination of others. So at this stage, you would have to say that the police department has scored one victory, and the public has scored zero.
But even now, the hearing judge in the case, that's Judge Barry Williams, who had ordered Porter to testify, who had said he should testify against Goodson. This is now based on the motion brought by the prosecution. But has he not already granted Porter immunity from prosecution? So Porter walks away with some bennies here that would not normally attach if he were simply to be tried again without this without being compelled to testify against his fellow officer. Does that immunity still hold?
Well, you see, that's the real problem, because now you have also a writ of prohibition that would be appropriate in a case like this, which says that the judge, in the first instance, acted in excess of his authority. And then when you start dealing with the question of immunity, it in itself is not a difficult issue to resolve. Of course, from the police officer union, they don't want Porter or anybody else to have immunity, because they don't want anybody to be subject to a criminal prosecution. So the idea that Porter might be given immunity does not help the overall position of the police union.
But does he still retain that immunity, even if the higher court were to say that he cannot be compelled to testify? Does he walk with that benefit into his possible, at least as certain, that's what the prosecutor is saying, his certain retrial?
Well, I don't think that will happen, because I'm of the view that the judge acted in excess of his authority in the first place. And if that view is embraced, then whatever the judge may have done would be viewed as null and void. But again, I think the key question here is that it is delayed, and justice delayed is justice denied.
I want to stick with this issue of immunity for a second, because this is typical in cases involving police trials, especially for police officers accused of brutality or excessive force or even lethal force. One of the things that always comes into play is this question of immunity. Now, from the very beginning, the fact that the district attorney was willing to discuss and basically was okay with the idea of extending immunity to Porter suggests an issue here that I'd like you to address, and that is, it seems as if the intention from the very beginning by the prosecution is to rely on Porter as perhaps the key witness or a key witness in this trial, and not on any other independent corroborative proof. What do you say to that analysis, my novice analysis?
Well, I don't agree with the analysis, because I think that the prosecutor's office has to have some degree of vision. And I think that within the scope of vision or foreseeability, that the problem that are now on the table should have already been foreseen. And so my view is that the original intent here was not to use Porter to convict anybody. The original intent here was to make sure that nobody get convicted.
Well, that's, in a way, that's what I'm trying to get at when I referred to in the opening as a legal backdoor that Porter appears to have already benefited from. One, this question of the conflicting issues of his constitutional rights, because he is facing retrial, and should he have been depended on, or should the prosecutors have depended on this specious legal position that they could compel him to testify even when he's to be retried, A, and B, whether, in fact, they, by giving him immunity, whether they signaled the weakness in their own case in terms of corroborative proof independent of Porter or anybody else in this trial.
Well, you see, one of the things that, I do, Eutrice, in practicing law is that I do three things for a reason. You know, I don't ask a client what happened. I don't ask a client to testify. And I refuse to allow a client to plead guilty. Now, if you really analyze all of that and think about all of that, what I believe is that lawyers should be able to diagram and dissect indictments as you are proficient to do in terms of diagramming and dissecting sentences. And so from the very outset, the intentions of the prosecutor in my mind was already laid to bear. And so this is why I said from the outset that what was appropriate here is for our community to do what should have been done in so many other cases and never is done in any case, and that is to, A, come together as a class and make a motion to intervene. And then upon the motion being granted, that we will be able to be in a position of having our own voices heard, which we are not able to do now. We can just simply talk about this on radio or on television, but our voices are not on the table in a courtroom. And I think that is, you know, what is critical, because obviously in these cases where you have an elected prosecutor who is attempting to prosecute her allies in a criminal court, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to recognize that she needs help. And this is exactly where we are, because she's in a box. I mean, you can't forget the fact, and I think I explained this past Saturday, is that in cases of this type, the political motivation must be examined. In addition to the political motivation being examined, we must also look at the special interests that are engaged in the prosecution. And the reality of it is that there are a lot of cases in which police officers are not prosecuted at all. And so in those cases where they are prosecuted, we must look at what is driving those prosecutions, and we must look at the special interests and whether the prosecutor will be able to overcome those special interest groups at all. And so, you know, it's a very complicated process. And so, you know, the first thing is that you start these cases in a war room, and you begin to look at all sides in that war room. You know, it's not like black people think that you just simply walk in somewhere unprepared and ready to do war. That is not what is happening here. And, you know, we keep repeating ourselves and doing the same thing and refusing to correct ourselves and continue to hate those who want to try to bring enlightenment and praise those who want to bring darkness. And so, you know, we're just in this real bind now, and I think that it's ultimately, as I said before, going to wound up for the benefit of the prosecution, because the first goal of the prosecution here is to protect the supervising officer, Brian Rice, I believe his name is, who was the supervisor on the scene at that particular time. Now, everybody else can go, but the point is we need to protect the supervising officer. And so that's why the supervisor officer was not the lead defendant in this case. And that's why we started off prosecuting political pawns in the hopes that that ultimately we would at least protect him. Now, the way it looks now, the prosecution is not getting ready to protect, not getting ready to convict anybody. And so, you know, we have to look at that. It's just it's a situation where it was really wrapped up in defeat, from the beginning. And I think that when you look at a case and you always see who the lead defendant is, that gives you a clear indication of a telltale sign of what is happening. And then the problem is what is the interest of lawyers in Baltimore in general, and particularly those lawyers in general in the National Bar Association, as to whether they want to see justice prevail or not. And so, you know, Dr. King said, and justice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. But that's something we don't practice. And so time and time again, we just let all this go past. And then next weekend, we'll be having crocodile tears for Dr. King for a minute. And the very essence of what he said has been totally ignored.
Well, I want to really deal with this issue of immunity here, because it suggests to me that either the prosecutor is very, very naive or unlearned in the law, or basically is just opening the back door for this case. Because I can't imagine how or why the prosecutors would want to compel Porter to testify, knowing that he is still facing very serious charges, including involuntary manslaughter and misconduct in office. These are very serious charges. But yet were willing to grant him immunity on any condition at all. This seems to be a very troubling signal. They said in their papers yesterday that Porter, quote, is the only witness able to testify to critical aspects of defendant Goodson's, as the officer Goodson's, alleged role in Mr. Gray's death, and that if the trial were to go forward without Porter's testimony, it would be a grave, this is their words, a grave injustice that would strip the state of a legislatively and constitutionally authorized tool for compelling the truth from an alleged witness to murder. Now, this seems incongruous to me, in the way the prosecutor is now regarding Porter and making the argument essentially for granting him immunity in exchange for his testimony, but beyond that, that he should qualify for immunity at all.
Well, this is a case where, you know, the prosecutor is guilty of inappropriate alignment of the political parties. And I think we have to go back to the philosophy of American jurisprudence, and that is self-preservation is the first law of nature. And so you have a situation here where, let's face it, we live in a police state. These police unions have awesome power, particularly as it applies to the black community, a community which does not practice ethics and therefore depends heavily on a standing army for its own seemingly survival. And so it's not confusing to me for the prosecutor to say, well, look, this whole case now hinges on Porter. Well, if it hinges on Porter, then you shouldn't have had Porter as the lead defendant. I mean, if it hinges on Porter, you should have Porter somewhere down near the bottom of the food chain. But you can't have it both ways. You can't put him at the top of the food chain and then turn around and say to everybody, well, this case is getting screwed up because Porter won't cooperate. I mean, that just won't wash. And this is where, you know, we are now. And I think that it's a lesson for the future because at some point, you know, in our own community, you know, we will sit down in a war room and listen to people who know what they're talking about to avoid a miscarriage of justice.
In the cases that I've covered, in the cases you've tried, this question of immunity translates to basically immunity from prosecution. It is not just about immunity so that you can testify. It is immunity from prosecution. So already we have a contradiction here, and the contradiction is being sent out, being communicated by the very office that should be taking the opposite position, that there is no there's no ground here for cutting deals. This is a clear-cut case in which you have six officers who are involved, according to the prosecutor. The six officers are involved in the death of Freddie Gray. All six have been charged, and all six should be on trial. And it seems to me a very mixed signal here about extending or allegedly wanting to extend immunity to Officer Porter. But now this raises a question about the state's position here in trying to compel Porter to testify against his fellow officer or officers, and what would happen now at another level should it occur, and that is at the federal level. How would this decision by the prosecution affect Porter's defense in the event that federal charges are to be proffered against him?
Well, that first of all, let me go back and explain to the audience something that may be nagging them, and that is that there are actually two types of immunity. There is what is called transactional immunity, and you also have use immunity. Now, the type of immunity that I'm particularly aware of, because it is the one that New York employs in its criminal prosecutions, and that is the one of transactional immunity. And that is the one that gets very touchy, because now you're talking about wiping out the entire transaction from culpability. And so the defendant, you know, in that case, gets home free. And that is the type that in New York, you know, prosecutors are particularly nervous about if they're acting in good faith. Because they don't want to give, at the stroke of a pen, a bill of clean health to a defendant. Now, on the other hand, you have what is not practiced here in New York, and so, you know, and may or may not be practiced in Maryland, and that is use immunity. And so in a case in which you have use immunity, you are basically saying that you will not use the evidence that was proffered from the defendant to convict that defendant, that you have independent evidence. And so now you are dealing with a situation where you really have to have a microscope and a fine-tooth comb to really go over the entire prosecutor's case to see whether use immunity may or may not harm that party's case. And so when you get ready to go up on appeal, you know, it really depends to a large extent on how honest the prosecutors are in terms of what they claim is not having anything to use to convict Porter other than what comes out of his mouth or not. And so, in addition to the whole theory of use immunity, now you have to really depend upon the credibility of the prosecutor's office in terms of whether they will actually be extremely honest and meticulously honest in displaying what they do have and what they don't have and what may really jeopardize a case or not. And that's why I said that when you get involved in these kinds of red herrings, it just makes it very difficult to really to proceed in a very speedy and timely fashion as is required by the U.S. Constitution.
If you were defending Officer Porter, would you feel comfortable with developments so far?
Well, it depends upon who I was overall had my loyalties to. I mean, if I, you know, was a lawyer who should only have his loyalties to Porter, you know, then obviously anytime that you don't get a conviction, you're ahead of the game. So in that sense, you know, one way or the other, I mean, no conviction has happened with Porter, and no conviction seems to be getting ready to happen to Goodson. And I don't see how any conviction is going to be happening anytime soon with the other criminal defendants in the death of Freddie Gray. To me, I would feel very optimistic at this point. And, you know, I would feel like I hold a winning hand, and the only thing I have to do is just sit down and be patient, you know, until the end.
If you were wearing your People's Attorney General's hat, what would you say would be the appropriate action to take with respect to the state's attorney at this time?
Well, you know, for me, if I was the People's Attorney General, then what happens in cases like that, in which you are the People's Attorney General, you would have just simply stepped in and removed her from the case. Because that can be done, for example, here in New York, and I imagine in most other jurisdictions, in a very much the same way, where you can look at a local prosecutor and say, I do not think it's in the best interest of the state of New York or the state of Maryland for you to be beholden to this case. And so I think that what really should have happened from the beginning is she was being asked too much. Because she basically had to walk a high wire and had to be able to survive. And that's just too much to ask of any prosecutor, while at the same time having an eye on the conviction of these various defendants in the death of Freddie Gray. So, you know, it goes back to what we really always start saying, is that you really got to make sure that it is right from the beginning. And you have to make sure that the table is stacked in such a way that there are no hidden traps involved in the prosecution of a police officer for the death of a civilian.
Well, we have a complication. It's not just the prosecutor. It is also the sitting judge in this case who said it was okay. It is permissible to have Officer Porter testify against Officer Cesar Goodson. It is now involving the Court of Special Appeals, and it goes on and on. But at this point, is it possible to ask the court who would petition the Court of Special Appeals? Or not just a Court of Special Appeals, who would petition and where would that petition go to have a new prosecutor appointed to handle this case?
Well, I would think that the governor of the state, you know, certainly would have the authority. I mean, he's overall chief executive officer and also in charge of all things that happen with respect to criminal prosecutions. And so, you know, it will certainly be that. Now, the problem that you have here is that, you know, justice is always for sale. And given the fact that justice is always for sale, then you're going to look to the highest bidder for how you have to proceed. Unfortunately, you know, when you start selling justice, we are not nowhere near the top of the totem pole. And so nobody's going to be listening to us, as even as a community, to give any real directions. But I think we have to be very mindful of the fact that the governor was just going to feel a natural alliance to the police officers and the law enforcement agencies. And I think that the real question is that we cannot afford, and I say this all the time, because, you know, when I was practicing, it was 24-7 for me. I mean, and I don't know how anybody can believe that it's not 24-7 for them. You know, I don't know how any Negroes get together and call themselves a political party or whatever the case might be, and don't think the same rule apply. This is serious business. And these people are playing to win. And it's like what Vince Lombardi said in football, winning is everything. And so, and as Malcolm X said, by any means necessary. I mean, that's what you're really working with here. And so, you know, anytime you have a day off, and we've had many days off, in Maryland, after we started rebelling, we cooled out, and it only takes that cooling off period for these people to regroup and to get back in the driver's seat. And so, you know, what it means is that really the time that you give people to have to think about new approaches, they're going to do that, and if we're not thinking ourselves at the same time, and we just gonna always lose. And we have a lot of people who are losers in our community. Unfortunately, we can't identify them because to most of us, they look like they are roses or gold that's glittering. But, you know, losing is unacceptable. And when you're dealing with white folks, that's what they believe in, that losing is unacceptable, and they're gonna do everything in their format. And I keep saying this, but I've said it before. I mean, I'm not saying anything new. You know, we just have to have a different modus operandi in which we operate. And we have to go seriously and think about that and not just go out and start criticizing people that we don't like and then begin to address this, because this is something that really, we should have been, and I hate to say we should have been, because you know, it looks like, you know, we can always lay blame somewhere. But when you've been given knowledge and you just don't act on that knowledge, I mean, this is the way it boils down. And just like it boils down in Baltimore, it's happening the same thing in Chicago. The same thing is happening in Texas. You know, the same thing is happening in Florida. I mean, just all across the board. And at some point, you would think that a people would just simply say, wait a minute. We need to regroup. We need to have a national convention to deal with a national problem, you know, and that's the only way that we're going to be able to address this. We just can't address it another way, and I hate to have to say it, but this is just true. And, you know, I hate to keep complaining about where we are, but this is where we are. You know, until we plan, we're not going to win. If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. I mean, it's just simple as that. And we have to come up with a military plan which embraces goals, timetables, strategies, and tactics. And in many cases, they're not always the same. And so when they are different, you know, we have to have a different approach. And it's like what people say about insanity. When you keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result, you're insane. And this is where we are now. We got to cut it out. And hopefully the case of Freddie Gray will be a wake-up call for us as a people and how we're going to have to approach this matter in the future, because this is something that continues. And, you know, we're talking about something now where it's getting ready to get even worse, because now you're having white people who are totally armed and exercising their Second Amendment rights. And so everybody in their community is virtually strapped down. And most of the people in our community are saddled with the vestiges of mass incarceration.
Well, that's a good point on which to end the segment. Thank you so much, Alton Maddox, for being with us today and walking us through some of the legal issues and questions here, even as this case begins to unfold. But already we have been seeing troubling signs. Thank you so much for your education today.
Thank you very much for the invitation, Patrice.
All right, you're welcome. I want to go next to a subject that should be on your minds this new year, and that is health. I did say to you as the old year closed out that it is very much something I would like to do, to impress upon you the importance of taking care of your health, to extend the time that you have on this planet as much as possible, if only to frustrate this system. But you should take care of yourself. And in this regard, I want to introduce you to Luann Panessi, who has been a maverick in the field of alternative health, complementary to the body rather than destructive of it. And I introduce you to her as someone who has been advising me on ways that I could cope, as you know, with my cancer. I was diagnosed, as you know, with cancer, stage 4B. And just today, as a matter of fact, I had my most recent test, and the doctors remarked that I look pretty good. Well, yeah, I always look kind of good. But it is to the credit of Gary Null and Luann Panessi, who works very closely with Gary Null. She has been in this field for more than 30 years and is running several workshops as part of the retreat, of Gary Null's retreat in Naples. Thank you so much, Luann, for being with us today.
Oh, you treat, what a pleasure. Well, you know what they say, living well is the best revenge.
Yeah, it is.
And if we took the collective minds from the people in your audience, with you and Gary and me, and we stayed on while other people are dropping like flies because of the type of lifestyle they're living, oh, I think we could make some real big positive changes. And what great ideas. Your guests, your people that call in, they have such wisdom, and that's what we need out there. Gary's having a retreat down here in Florida, and it's from January 24th through the 30th. That's coming up. And we have a couple of spots open. This is not a vacation of sorts. This is more of, I would say, an authentic experience for people with personal meaning. We have an environment here that lends itself to peace and tranquility and relaxation while you dig deeper into your own mind's eye as to what you're actually doing here on the planet and what do you need to do to take your life back, to take your health back, or to maximize your health, or in your case, to really get on top of a chronic condition. Your body is just screaming for your attention when you have a chronic illness, whether it's high blood pressure or cancer or diabetes, whatever it is. Your body is just screaming for your attention. Well, we're going to give your body that attention. And we're going to challenge your mind. We help you with attitudes, perceptions, and kind of giving you a whole new reality so that you can be the kind of a activist that we need right now. We don't need activists who are angry, judgmental, critical, pessimistic, sarcastic, cynical, negative, or people that are just victims of their circumstances. And one of the things I love about your show, Utrice, is that you help people to rise above that. You help them understand the issue from many different angles. And then you talk about positive solutions, not going in and ransacking a whole neighborhood because someone shot a kid. You know, there's many other ways to approach that. And it's horrible, some of the things that are happening. It's true. But when you're in an environment like this, you're surrounded, first of all, by nature. We have people that will go around, and you can pick the fruit right off the tree. Lemons, grapefruits, we have tangerines. It's just wonderful to be able to pick fruit right from the tree, wash it off, and eat it. And we have that here in Naples. It's wonderful. We're going to teach people about sprouting, which you can do right in your kitchen window. And we're going to show you hydroponics, where, as we speak, we're building a hydroponic setting in Florida. You're going to have animals. Oh, my God. The animals are just beautiful. We have little pot-bellied pigs running around. We have goats. They just want a lot of love. We have peacocks wandering around. Gary has many aviaries down here. And when you look into the eyes of these animals, they're vulnerable, like us, but in a different way. So you experience a kind of a bliss when you're here in nature. Gary has the largest bamboo garden I've ever seen. And he's got these two giant bloodstone rocks. And when you sit between them, you feel the energy. You feel a vibration going through you. It's remarkable. So when you're in that kind of a setting, and there's a lightness about it, we have a lot of fun down here. We help you to detoxify physiologically, emotionally, mentally, and environmentally. So we're going to have art classes. We have yoga and meditation classes every day. We power walk. We have John Q down here that's like a personal trainer. And we have Cecilia, who is also a personal trainer. So we have people helping you with exercise. Now, we're not doing, Olympic workouts here. But guess what? Utrice went out and got herself a medal a couple of months ago.
Yes, I did.
And you know what? It was just plain old-fashioned self-discipline and determination. And we help you with that. When you're surrounded by like-minded people and people who are supporting you unconditionally, that is what makes the difference. That's what helps you push past your own self-created barriers. So we help you to become strong and resilient. And that's what we need. This is what we need now. It's kind of like a warrior energy, but it's with dignity, respect, and responsibility, because you're coming from your authentic self. So instead of living in fear, we teach you non-fear, non-guilt-based behavior. We help you to strive for your highest potential. That's what we're doing here. So we're going to help you detox your liver. We're going to support the adrenals. We have organic, vegan, gourmet cuisine that comes right out of Gary's cookbooks. And he supervises the chef every single day. And sometimes he surprises us and makes his own dishes. And the guilt-free desserts, oh, my God, people are just raving. They rave about his food here. A lot of people that come down that were meat eaters leave here saying, I had no idea this kind of food could be so delicious, because, when people hear vegan, they think of, like, brown rice and broccoli and boring salads. No, 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 no. We bring you nuts, seeds, beans, tempeh, all kinds of squash and sweet potatoes, quinoa pasta, Mediterranean dishes, Oriental dishes. So there's a lot of wonderful, there's a whole new world out there when you're not familiar with things that grow out of the ground. Edible flowers, even.
Luann, I just wanted to know, tell people how to get more information and how to participate in this retreat, because I highly recommend it.
Well, guess who else is going to be there? That would be you, my dear.
Yes,
that would
be
you.
There.
And so if people are looking to spend some time with Utrice and to be exercising with her and relaxing with her, this is the place. There's no better place. I'm going to have people give me a call. You're going to get an answering machine. I want you to just say I'm interested in your retreat. Leave your name and your number. The number to call is 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. Give a call. I will call everybody back within the next 24 to 48 hours so you can get flights down. I have some people that might be driving down. There's a little different ways to get here. But we're in Florida.
But also, you know, do personalize the attention for some people who would need it. Some people have particular things that they're dealing with and would need some help with, and that's available as well.
Everyone gets personal health counseling from me. I'm here. I've got a first aid kit. I'm the nurse here. I'm the nurse on the premises. And everybody has an opportunity to meet with me one-on-one if they choose. And I can help you with everything from menopause, andropause, anti-aging, chronic conditions, you name it. I can help you with it.
The number again, Luann?
The number is 631-504-6198. Again, 631-504-6198. Give me a call. I'll be happy to give you more information, and we'll get you registered so you can get to spend a week with Utrecht Lead.
And just remember, just say, hey, I'm a Lead Stories listener, and I heard about this on Lead Stories. That would be great. I'd love to know who is calling in and who will be with us from the 24th to the 30th. Thanks, Luann, for being with us today.
It is so my pleasure. I look forward to seeing you there and people in your audience.
Thank you. Well, that brings us to the end of the program today. I hope it was instructive. When we get behind these issues and we see the microscopic view, the component parts of things that we take for granted, and you see how things evolve, and therefore you see that in so many instances, it's not so surprising when the inevitable becomes the inevitable. Okay? You see where things are going, and that's why on this program, with respect to these cases, Alton Maddox and I have been talking about them with such accuracy because we've been down these roads before many, many times to the point where it is almost a science. You can predict with relative accuracy where things are going. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Infectious Myth with David Crow. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. And do call 631-504-6198 if you're interested in turning your health around and turning your head around about your health. Bye-bye. See you tomorrow.
And then I heard, don't give up. It's time to stop your falling. Yeah, you've been down long enough. Yeah, can't you hear the Spirit's calling? Yes, it's the Spirit. Can't you hear it? Calling your name, calling your name. Talking about spirit. Ain't no way overnight to turn your life around. And this ain't the conversation of someone who never falls back down. But no matter how long you've been on top with the days and the weeks of self-denial, and no matter how many times you tried to make it and found out that right then you just couldn't take it, if you're looking for a loser who found strength and success, remember the spirit of Brother Malcolm X. And know that you can leave all of your mistakes behind the day that you really make up your mind. 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 Come on, brother, pull on up. Stand on up and see.